Hi, I'm Tony Mala, and welcome to the ASA Podcast, a program for automotive professionals that helps keep you ahead of what's now, what's new, and what's next in the business of automotive service and collision repair. This podcast is brought to you by the Automotive Service Association, dedicated to driving your success. And we'll be sharing information, insight, and inspiration that will not just help you make a living, it will help you make a difference. Welcome to a special first anniversary episode of the ASA Podcast. To celebrate the occasion, we put together a retrospective with selected nuggets from several podcasts that together track the unusual events of the past year. As our intro says, it's a collection of information, insight, and inspiration from a cross-section of guests who are making a difference in the automotive service and collision repair industries. Some from years of experience, others who represent our future. Together, they tell the story of how this podcast documents its first year of existence and continues to evolve, adapt, and change to meet our mission of not just helping you make a living, but helping you make a difference. On October 14, 2019, ASA Podcast episode number one was uploaded to Buzzsprout. Since then, we've published 67 podcasts. In our first podcast, we talked about the value of social media in educating consumers about our industry and how best to use it to promote your business. On that day, 1 year ago, no one could have imagined how our world would change a short 4 months later, nor could we have anticipated how events would and continue to affect virtually every aspect of our daily lives. Here's how it all started. You're listening to What's Next in the first of our new ASA podcast series. And what better way to begin than by talking to two award-winning ASA members who do it very well in several social mediums, and they've graciously agreed to come onto the show to share some of the nuggets they've picked up along the way. I'd like to introduce Frank Leutz from Desert Car Care in Chandler, Arizona. How you doing, Frank?
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
And we have Jeff Buckley, visual storyteller from my father's shop in Midlothian, Texas. How you doing, Jeff?
Pretty good. So excited to be here with you, yeah. Tony.
And both of these gentlemen are involved in several media. Frank is the host of Wrench Nation, and both are actually involved not just in social media, but in the industry, both inside and outside the shop. Frank, why don't we start with you? How long have you been using social media to promote your business?
We have been, to answer your question, we've been using social media since about when, 2008, 2009.
Wow, okay. Yeah. And Jeff, you've been doing quite a bit, I know, on Facebook lately. How long have you been doing this?
And myself, I've only been really involved in it in about 3 or 4 years.
Hmm.
You know, the consumer doesn't understand all of the different tools and technology that we have to have and the training to work on the technology in today's vehicles.
Is there any particular kind of content that you find that the consumers that you're trying to reach are most interested in? What sort of things come up all the time?
Well, I think the education side of things is key. You know, the professional side of an automotive service center wants to educate folks. And so that's always going to be number one. Folks always want to have tidbits of education as to why do I need 100,000-mile service. Mm-hmm. Now, within that, the show and tell is key, right? So the more show and tell, value-driven education that we can put out, that's going to inform the consumer, educate the consumer. And that's a, you know, that's a feather in your cap as a service center because you want to get that message out. Now, within that, I also think the other side of the consumer wants to see what kind of character is a shop. And of course, we want the professional accolades, but I think we also want to be human beings and celebrate life. And so a lot of folks enjoy some of the entertaining aspects of what we do in the garage, whether we found a cat in a cabin filter or, you know, what have you. And it, that's striking. So I think a good blend of content between education and celebrating life, you know, celebrating your garage and mm-hmm. that garage life, people are attracted to. I mean, that's what we see with our place, you know.
Showing you.
Yeah, I mean, do you? I mean, we all have our own message.
And promoting the professionalism, because that's one deal that our industry has struggled with a lot. And it's a lot of our part to educate them now that, okay, where it used to be, you can just call and get it somebody come switch out your windshield. You can't do that anymore because the windshield has to be done. Now, all of a sudden, you're calibrating cameras. Mm-hmm. You're looking to see if something got misaligned on the bumpers. That affects these systems. That's all part of the training and stuff that we have to learn. And then we have to have the tools and technology to work on those to put them back like they were.
Well, and actually, you raise another important point. I think it's important to be able to educate customers that things that they never heard of before now have to be done to this new vehicle they just bought. For example, you mentioned replacing the windshield, now requiring a calibration. Well, if they break a mirror, an outside mirror with a camera in it, lots of reasons. In fact, I was approached by one of the consumer publications who was shocked to find out that something had to be recalibrated, and now that alignment job was almost $600, and they couldn't understand why. And I think this would be a wonderful way of enhancing that. But listen, just as with automotive technology, it would seem our communication tools have become more effective, and the ability for an individual to literally connect with the world quickly and easily and relatively inexpensively, I don't think has ever before existed. And to the extent it does today, certainly, nor has the importance of such connectivity to those engaged in the business of automotive service and repair.
With the launch of the ASA podcast, we wasted no time in getting out to the industry to engage in face-to-face interviews. One of the first came from a visit to the ASA Florida Foundations event. We all know the importance of finding qualified technicians to ensure our future success. These are the voices of the next generation of automotive professionals, and here's what they had to say.
I'm broadcasting from the Automotive Service Association of Florida Foundation's training and trade show here at the Daytona International Speedway. This is the first of this event, and we have before us today 10 members of the future of our industry, 10 students from JTEC Institute in Jacksonville, Florida. And we've asked them to come here so they can answer some questions that everyone wants to know. We know what we're looking for from you, from the industry. We give you a curriculum of a study. We tell you what our requirements are, and your teachers try to fulfill those requirements, whether they come from the academic side or their advisory councils that say, look, I need somebody who shows up every day as much as I need somebody who knows how to use a scan tool. My question is, what are you looking for, and what are you expecting from an employer to pick the one that hires you?
I would be looking for someone that's going to help me grow, or a company that I can grow with, not just stay in one position and just do one thing, but something where I can grow and get better understanding as well as training.
Well, you know, my whole life I've kind of been the jack of all trades, know a little bit of everything. And what I really look for is an employer who will provide me with a career in which I can become a master of my craft.
I like to look for an employer that is willing to put as much work into me as I am willing to put in for them. You know, like, I don't want them to be sitting here just like spoon feeding me everything and expect nothing in return.
The biggest thing I've been looking for mostly is like everyone else has said at this point, you know, compensation for the work you do.
Sure.
You know, I've worked a lot of jobs, been a lot of places. The biggest thing I see, not just in this industry, but in every industry and around the country at this time, is people just don't want to pay you for your time or your work. Mm-hmm. You know, and it is disheartening when you put, you know, 80 hours in and your paycheck's like $700.
I'm already in the field, but I'm interested in companies that are going to be willing to invest in me. In order to become a master of any trade, you're going to have to continue your education. Things change constantly, year to year. Cars change, vehicles change, the systems change. And if you can't keep up with it, it doesn't matter what you do. You're not going to be a master at it for very long. So I would be looking for a company that's willing to invest in me. But if you're just going in, hey, just do an oil change. Just keep doing oil changes. It gets mundane. It gets boring, and the compensation doesn't ever come to fruition.
I guess for me, what I'm looking for in an employer is someone who's not afraid to give me the chance to prove myself, and who would actually, instead of pushing opportunities out of my grasp, bring them to me so that I can learn more. And once they see my work ethic and everything, they would help me grow. I don't want them to be afraid that, you know, 5 or 6 years, however, down the road, I'm going to leave. So I guess, yeah, room for improvement, room for growth, extra training, someone who's going to invest, I'll piggyback on that, and believe in my abilities.
What I'm looking for in an employer is just to provide me with stability for my family.
Mm-hmm.
also just support in continuing education and continuation of growth. And someone that will, like I say, support me just as much as I support their company.
I guess I'm really, just looking for an employer who's not scared to give me the challenges. I can understand you have to get to know somebody, but I know I will prove myself and I learn fast, and I just want someone who's going to recognize that and, you know, keep pushing me farther in my career.
I would say I need somebody who's willing to fan that flame. Somebody who's not going to be intimidated by the drive that I have. Somebody who's willing to do for me what I'm willing to do for them. If I may, I used to work in a certain facility for about a year and a half. And being there, I was the youngest. I was the most physically capable because of the circumstances. And there was just a lot of intimidation by the work ethic that I had, by the drive, by the willingness to do the work and help others and still be able to do my own tasks. And others were being intimidated, like worrying that I was going to take their spot.
You know, I want the same loyalty that I'm willing to provide. You know, I've worked several jobs, and the first job that I ever worked at, I still know the owners, talk with them frequently on Facebook, and they might not have paid me as much as some of the other jobs I've worked at, but the care they provided me, their attitude towards me, they're willing to help me learn in an industry at the time. They were willing to teach and help me grow, help me learn, help me be better at my job and better at other jobs so I could provide them. And, you know, that's what I'm looking for in an employer. I don't want just more learning opportunities. I want them to give me a reason to stay with them. There's so many different employers out there who are willing to give you that. But how many of them are willing to show you that they care about you as a person rather than just another tool to throw away?
We had one more comment.
My personal goal is to learn something new every day. The way I see it, a true master of their craft is somebody who never stops learning right until the last day. My boss has been, you know, an excellent provider of somebody who teaches me new things about what I do. And in turn, I show that appreciation by working my hardest. So when I look for a new employer, when that time comes, only is it going to be hard for me to leave where I'm at now because, you know, it's a great place. But I expect that same thing from my new employer when I finally get to be into the field.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it has been a true honor and a pleasure to speak with you today. I will make several observations. The first is the industry is in good hands. Compensation is important. You have to be able to feed your family, or why bother? Okay, that's a given. And I would venture to say these days, so is healthcare. Now, let's face it, that's one of the biggest concerns all of us have. But most of you talked about personal improvement. Most of you talked about growth. You talked about wanting to become better as a person, better as an employee, actually, and eventually as an employer, I'm sure. But I think you're focused on the right things. You're focused on the most important thing of all, and that is yourselves as far as keeping to develop your skill set. The world we live in is changing, and it's amazing to me the amount of change I've seen just in the space of one career, especially when it comes to this field. But the capability of recognizing that, you know, I don't know everything, and I have to keep learning because everything is changing every day, is really the most important, I think, skill set you can have. Because if you are constantly learning, if you are constantly teaching yourself something new, and if you are building on the skills that you have in the past, then you will have no problem at all doing exactly what you all aspire to do, and that is to find a career that you love and never work a day in your lives.
The subject of rapidly changing vehicle technology is a common theme when talking to those whose job it is to apply that technology and build what's next. In January at the ASA MSO Symposium, I spoke with Jason Verlin of CCC Information Systems about how telematics is redefining the consumer experience and influencing the collision claims and estimating process. He also estimated how many of these vehicles are on the road right now. This is what he had to say.
I'm talking to Jason Verlin, Senior Vice President of Product Management at CCC Information Systems, one of the presenters for the 8th Annual MSO Symposium here in Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. Jason, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony.
Jason, your presentation is on how technology is redefining the consumer experience. Tell us about how technology is affecting the collision industry.
Yeah, it's affecting it in a really extraordinary way. You know, I think most of it started in the insurance sector, where there was a, you know, a combination of things that they were dealing with that were increasing costs, and also they were dealing with a consumer base that was very used to a different experience driven by their mobile phones in any number of other areas and interests that they had. And what I think what you see happening is, starting with insurance, a consumer experience really routed from its genesis of a mobile phone, artificial intelligence, and also telematics is dramatically changing how the consumer interacts with their car manufacturer, their insurance company, and their repair shop. And that transformative experience both leads to higher satisfaction, more self-directed consumer experience, and also dramatic new efficiencies for people providing the services, particularly repair and insurance. So, you know, right now, through a telematics program, a lot of cars are now telematically enabled. And through CCC, let's say you want to ask an insurance company to underwrite you. If you're driving a connected car through CCC system and your permission, the insurance company can get your driving data from the OEM directly, run it through an event process, understand how you drive, sharp right turns, sharp left turns, hard stops, etc., score you, and then give you a quote right there on the phone at that time in real time based on your actual driving, not old demographic information and stuff like that, but actually the real information that they need to know to understand your risk. So that's a fundamental change, and that's a similar kind of change that you're starting to see all throughout this ecosystem.
What percentage of the car fleet do you estimate is telematics enabled at this point?
So here are the numbers that we're using. By the end of 2020, between connected cars from OEMs and telematically enabled vehicles through an insurance program, we are looking in the United States at a minimum, and this is a ridiculously conservative number, of 50 million vehicles, meaning very obviously we will be at critical mass for the adoption of these technologies.
You know, regardless of how quickly technology is advancing, someone is eventually going to have to service and repair it. That means ongoing training is a must for today's technicians. In February, the ASA podcast interviewed Mario Rojas, a young diagnostic technician who freely shares his diagnostic knowledge on YouTube. Given what was to become a nationwide lockdown due to the coronavirus pandemic, his comments on new ways of remote learning turned out to be a statement on things to come.
I think it's also important to understand the individuals who now make up our industry and who's behind us, if you want to think of it that way. And it's always encouraging to see the younger technicians come out, making sure they're keeping up with changing technology. And I had the pleasure of running into Mario Rojas from Pete's Complete Auto Service. Hi, Mario.
Hey, how's it going, Tony?
Thanks for taking the time with us today. You mentioned a YouTube channel. What do you do on the YouTube channel?
I actually share everything I can possibly share. It's called Super Mario Diagnostics.
So you actually do these on a regular basis?
Yes, I try to post as much as I can about the things I learn and just, you know, anything that can help others diagnose in a way that maybe they didn't diagnose it that certain way before.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of oscilloscope-based diagnostics, mm-hmm. Drivability diagnostics, misfires, using pulse sensors, the things that I've learned. I try to put some of that stuff in there, things that I learned in general, because that's how I learned. I learned most of the stuff that I know was from YouTube up until, you know, the whole train by text thing came around. And that was when I was first exposed to training events. And it was the beginning of something amazing, really.
I got to tell you, what's amazing is your use of YouTube to pass along knowledge. Is this type of knowledge sharing becoming more common, especially, I imagine, among the younger technicians?
Absolutely. There's been a huge wave of knowledge sharing based on the most convenient media, which is YouTube. Mm-hmm. So that's how I learned.
By March, the pandemic had disrupted every scheduled live training event and meeting in our industry. So ASA went virtual and began offering even more of our regular webinar training. That extended to our podcast as well. So we stepped outside of the box and posted the first technical training podcast with Richard Hawkins, who provided some AC compressor diagnostic tips from his training class at the MAX convention, one of the last live events before the shutdown. Learning never stops, and it turned out to be popular with our audience and the first of many to follow.
I'm talking to Richard Hawkins of the AC Tech Team at 1-800-Radiator and AC at the MAX training event and trade show here in Nashville, Tennessee. Richard, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for inviting me. It's indeed an honor to be here.
You're one of the trainers here, and you were talking about compressors today, I believe, in your class, weren't you?
That's right. Our class was focused on compressor design and differences in compressor behavior and how that applies to diagnostics. The thing that we find in a lot of cases when we're talking to people trying to help them diagnose these problems, they aren't aware of the differences in behavior of these compressors. And in some cases, they're not even aware that variable displacement compressors exist. They think that even though variable displacement compressors have been out, or variable output and variable displacement compressors have been out since about 1985, that everything is fixed displacement. And they behave quite differently, and not understanding that and knowing how to apply that information sometimes can easily result in an incorrect diagnosis and replacing a compressor that doesn't really need to be replaced.
What are the differences between fixed versus variable output, et cetera, that would affect the diagnostic process?
With a fixed displacement compressor, it's either on or off. It runs at a full displacement, and you have a cycle and switch which will either turn it on and off. With a variable displacement compressor, that compressor can vary from a low of 2% of displacement up to 100% and all points in between. For that reason, you can get pressure readings which are significantly different. For example, if you had just a conventional fixed displacement compressor on an orifice tube system and you had, let's say, a 90-degree day, your high side pressure typically, you could expect it to be somewhere in the neighborhood of probably about 180 to maybe about, 250 or so, depending upon some other variables such as humidity, heat load, blower speed, setting whether it's recirculate or outside air, that sort of thing. With a variable output, a variable displacement compressor, under those same conditions, you might see a high side pressure only running at maybe 110 to maybe 140. We had a video that we showed yesterday. We started off with it in a low heat load condition, and it was running about 110 PSI, and it only got up to 165 under the highest of heat loads. So it's easy for somebody to do an incorrect diagnosis because they'll have maybe a pressure, high side pressure that's extremely low. And a system may not be cooling good because of something like a blend oil problem, which is allowing the extra heat to get into the air coming out of the vents. And they'll look at it and like say, oh, I got only 110 pounds on the high side. I should have 180. I better replace the compressor. And you know, what they need to understand is that they need to focus more on what the low side pressure is. If a low side pressure is where it's about where it's supposed to be, then most of the time you don't have a problem with a compressor.
In April, with the pandemic sweeping the nation, our focus turned toward providing important information to our ASA members and the industry at large to help cope with the crisis. We started talking to shop owners to share best practices for keeping their customers and employees safe. In episode 35, Vinny Lucido of Co Auto in Reno, Nevada, shared how communication was key to keeping his customers informed and employees trained on proper safety precautions and much more.
You've been doing some community education already. Are you doing anything special during the crisis to communicate with your customers?
Yes, we've made some videos and such to kind of inform our clients what we're doing to maintain their safety as well as the safety of our staff and let people know that we're still here serving the community.
What are some of the things you're doing to help keep your customers safe? What are some specifics as far as what the shop is doing to deal with the virus?
Specifically, now we've maintained the 6-foot rule, so we've closed our waiting room temporarily for will waits. So we have nobody waiting in there, but we have a 6-foot baseline. At that, if a client determines they want to come into the shop and not use our drop box, which is one of the options, the drop box is located outside the business. So clients can fill out an envelope, drop their key in there, and never even come inside. So we can be 100% contactless. Although some clients choose to walk through the door, we've set up a barrier in a sense to make sure that we maintain that 6-foot distance. And then we have our disinfectant wipes sitting there on a chair so that a client can set their keys directly onto them. And now the rest of the communication can all be done electronically as we use a shopware management system, and it enables us to use text messages for communication, and as well as we can send our initial estimate to the client right there at the front desk, and they can sign that before they even leave through their own personal device, which is super helpful. Once we grab those keys, we are disinfecting the keys and the key fob. Upon entry of the vehicle, we have cleaned the door handles, anything that a client might touch, from the door handles to the steering wheel, the shift lever, the blinkers, the light switches, anything that we're going to touch that they may have touched, we disinfect it immediately with, typically it's our bleach water solution. Now, if bleach is going to be an issue with the client's particular cloth or vehicle, then we'll use the disinfectant wipes. We're also using floor mats and seat covers. We make sure to clean the steering wheel very well because that's the most germ-ridden place in a vehicle. Once we've done that, it's ready for our technician. The technician brings it in. We're always replacing our gloves, wearing new gloves with every service. And every time we get in and out of a vehicle, we've been instructed to replace our gloves. And these are new policies and procedures that we put in place and had the staff sign, so they're well aware of what they are. And we've had a meeting both yesterday and today. Mondays and Tuesday mornings, we have meetings to ensure that we're all following these protocols. And those are meetings we've always had, but now they've kind of adapted to just making sure that we're following protocol. And once we repair the cars and that's completed, we do that same process on the outtake. So we've always done a quality control where we wash the windows, vacuum the floors, vacuum the seats, clean the dash, make it look fresh. Now we're including as well cleaning the steering wheel, and all the disinfectant steps that we take initially, we do again to then protect the client on their end. So when they pick up their vehicle, it's been disinfected as we exit the vehicle. Also using a pickup box. So a client can simply use the last four digits of their phone number. We have six boxes. We can leave their keys in one of those boxes, give them the number of the box and the code, and they simply come up to it and they can extract their keys that have been, once again, sanitized before they've been put in there, so they can be rest assured that when they get in their vehicle and drive away, that there is no contamination from us.
By May, we were cautiously starting to reopen America, and once again, the ASA podcast was there with sound advice from Dr. Bob Reich. Dr. Reich is the medical director and chairman of the emergency department at Baylor Scott & White in Grapevine, Texas. He's a frontline medical hero helping to save lives as the battle against COVID-19 continued. In episode 44, Dr. Reich offers some insight into how repair shop owners and employees should protect themselves and their customers as America starts going back to work.
Well, I think the first thing to know about COVID, unfortunately, is that up to 50% of people can either have no symptoms or very mild symptoms. So that's part of the problem with this disease, is that many people actually have COVID-19 and can spread it to other people but not have symptoms themselves. So that's one area of concern. And that's one of the reasons why contact tracing is so important, so that if we find people that are inadvertently spreading this, that we can have them quarantine until they get over the disease. But the symptoms that people do have, when people do have symptoms, the symptoms that they have are basically cough, shortness of breath, fever and chills, muscle aches and pains, sore throat. And some people are having loss of taste and smell, which is kind of interesting. Other people now are actually showing that about 20% of people can have GI symptoms. So things like nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea have been reported with this as well. So unfortunately, these are the same symptoms that you can have with any viral illness, and they're not specific just to COVID, which is, it makes this difficult.
We've seen from the CDC a lot about just simple soap and water is your best defense. What are your thoughts? And is there like a safe enough method when you're talking about how you should wash your hands or how you should use the hand sanitizer? Are there any best practices along those lines you can think of?
There are. I think that using almost any soap is useful or is the best practice for hand washing. And the number one problem that most people have when they wash their hands is that they put a little bit of water on it and they rub their fingers together and they rinse it off and they think that they're done. The current best practice is really to sing something like Happy Birthday while you're washing your hands, and you should wash your hands until you've finished the song. And I think people forget to wash in between their fingers and the back of their hands. So really getting everything off of your hands is important. I think that mechanics may be a little different than other people, because generally, you know, if you're working on a car or things that are dirty, you can see where all the dirt is, and so you know where to wash from that perspective. But the average person, like perhaps your cashier or customer service reps, their hands aren't dirty, and so they don't know that they missed some on the back or some in between their fingers or under their fingernails. So that's part of the reason why they just need to be more thorough about washing. But I think any soap and water is good. We have a saying in science, dilution is the solution. And so really, the more you can wash your hands, the less likely you are to have a virus left on the hands. So good rinsing and soap is good. In terms of the hand gel, the current recommendation is that you use something with at least 60% alcohol. I know that it has been scarce and hopefully is opening up a little more now. I know that at least here in Dallas, the one distillery that is now taking gin and mixing that with aloe to make 60% alcohol gel sanitizer for some of our area hospitals. And I think it is in short supply now, but as the days go by, more and more people are being creative about making this stuff. And I think that it'll be more available in the future. The whole point behind alcohol is that it's a desiccant, so it dries out the area and theoretically kills viruses and bacteria that way. And so that if you don't let it dry, then it hasn't done its job. So you do need to let it dry before you move on to the next task.
Attitude is everything, they say. And also in May, we thought it was time for a morale boost. With this in mind, the ASA Positively Positive podcast talked with Jeff Buckley, Frank Lloyds, and Vinny Lucido to share their favorite quotes and inspiration to show how a crisis can bring out the best in everyone. Learning how to adapt and thrive under the worst of circumstances is something our industry does well.
Times like this is when change happens. Change happens in a big way. And times of crisis usually, as I said at the beginning of the program, brings out the best in us. It also tends to bring out the brightest of us. And I think that you three are great examples. You were doing this long before we had the current crisis. You've adapted your skill set. You've adapted your programs. You've adapted your what you've always done to a new set of circumstances, and you've prospered. And I think that is a positive message that I think we need to share with the entire industry. You know, we have the capability and the creativity to be better and to take care of our customers in such a way that they're going to be our customers for life. And again, you three demonstrate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Tony. You said it, you know, adaptation and opportunity. It's all there right now.
Someday we'll look back at this. And I just want to say to everyone listening that, you know, find ways to look out. The guy across the street, he may not be active in the industry, man. You know, go out there and just check on him. There's plenty of work for everybody. Because he may turn his boat around when he says, oh, wow, Jeff came by, or Vinny, or Frank, or Tony. That's what it's about, man. And, you know, and that's how we lift it up. Vinny says it amazingly. Like, look, at the end of the day, it's about spirit to your business. We're always going to go crazy over numbers. That's going to be there. So check on your neighbor. And I know some of these guys, their business is rough. And some of them I was not hanging with 10 years ago. But we just figured out a way to make peace. And you know what? Let's buy the barbecue, man. Because life is too short. And I think that spirit, that's important. That's the drive.
I had asked the group before we started, I want to leave everyone with a positive message. Believe in yourself and your dreams. Your life is as good as your mindset, and character is who you are when no one is watching. And all of these things promote the positives. But more importantly, I think this group inspires joy. And I have to tell you, for what all of you do for the industry, for your communities, and as spokespeople, Jeff, you're out there every day. Vinny, I've seen you, I think, more the past couple of weeks in various venues than I have in the last year. Frank, what can I say? The hard part is getting you off the air, I know. But any final positive words for the shop owners? If you had one thing to say, one quote to say, what would it be? What sort of positive message would each of you like to leave with the industry after this? Frank, I'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, I've had this board up for a long time. It's one of my favorite quotes I like to share with the team is, success is never final. Failure is never fatal. At the end of the day, man, it's about courage. And we're going to have good and bad. That's part of the mix. It's part of the deal. But let's show up. Let's show up. And let's show up for our people. It's the courage that counts.
Jeff, what do you got to share?
You know, the deal I've always had is, though you walk through the valley of the shadow of the death, you know, you got someone with you there. And so you just keep on, you persevere, you do what you can, and you worry about what you can worry, what you can control, and don't worry about all the rest of it. And this is, you know, the whole mantra of your business is, you know, doing the right thing, even when someone's not watching. Even, you know, it's like when we fix cars, people know we fix the cars right. They know we're using quality parts. You're going to do these things in the community, whether someone's watching you or not. You're not doing it to get your name out. You're doing it because it's the right thing to do. And it's not just what's the right thing to do right now. No, it's the right thing to do all the time. Just control what you can control. Yeah.
Well, what you say is at the heart of ethics, and I think that's one of the hallmarks of all ASA members, and frankly, a great number of shop owners out there. Benny, I'll give you the last word. Any uplifting thoughts before we call it an evening?
Well, absolutely. You know, the seas are rough out there. The wind is blowing in, and you just got to hold on. But so this one's by Franklin D. Roosevelt, and it's calm seas never made a good sailor. So you need these rough seas. You need these hard times, and that's what makes you stronger in the end.
With summer upon us and now 6 months into the pandemic, we talk with Fred Hules, owner of Tech One Auto in Peoria, Arizona, to share his thoughts on what ASA and its affiliates are doing to help shops over the long haul. From virtual networking and meetings to taking advantage of the stimulus help from Washington, Fred offered his perspective on the good, the bad, and the different from the Southwest.
And we thought this would be a good time to check in with some ASA members around the country to see how they're doing as the country starts to reopen from the lockdown caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Well, let's first talk about what ASA Arizona has been doing during the pandemic to help our ASA members stay abreast of developments over the last 2 months.
Well, one of the big things is just the dissemination of information. As you know, we are tremendously blessed by having boots on the ground, if you will, in Washington, D.C. with our lobbyist, Bob Redding. Bob's been doing a yeoman's job, as well as national staff, on getting information out as to what's happening and keeping us all apprised. Mm-hmm. And then once that information gets down to us, our director has been doing a great job of getting emails out, letting us know what's going on and what opportunities and benefits there are available to us. That we can take advantage of these hard times, you know, with the PPP loan, mm-hmm. things of that sort, you know. So, and then there's also been getting together. That's been a great plus in talking amongst each other and how we can help each other out.
Has ASA Arizona been using video meetings like Zoom to talk to each other?
You know, we have. I mean, that's one thing that we've been doing here on a local level. For instance, we've gotten together so we could talk about what's going on, you know, some of the best practices and things of that sort. And then also, too, we had a local small business loan banker that we had here in the Valley that many of us have a relationship with that was actually able to get on and through these digital meetings, you know, tell us the process and what we could do with their bank, not only their bank, but other banks as well, getting us that help with the PPP loan.
So the ASA Arizona members have been taking advantage of the stimulus support available from the federal government.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, many of us have. You know, one thing that we learned early on is that the big banks were not the way to go. And the smaller banks were seemed to be quicker, you know, to get things rolling, you know, because this all happened so fast, right? The smaller community type banks seem to be quicker in adopting, you know, procedures and getting the loans funded, you know, through SBA. So, you know, we were able to share that information and a lot of our members were able to get the resources through the PPP loan that they needed.
You know, that PPP money has been a lifesaver, along with the extensions to the unemployment insurance for many businesses and employees.
Yeah.
And I echo your thoughts on Bob Redding, who does a great job representing the interests of ASA members in Washington, D.C. You know, when they were writing the legislation deciding what businesses were considered essential, Bob was right there to make sure that automotive repair shops were included on that list.
We hear quite frequently, you know, what value do I get from being a member of ASA? What does it mean to me? You know, and unfortunately, in times like this, you know, it really comes to the forefront. Well, this is what it really means because, you know, we all know, I'm using a blanket statement, but I'm sure many of us shop owners have friends and there are other business owners and other industries that have no idea what's going on and how to take advantage of what's being afforded us by Congress. You know, the membership is, you know, especially in these times, is invaluable right now. A lot of times we forget how much it does, what can help us, you know, and having Bob back there is just, you know, where would we be if we didn't have him?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I guess it's human nature that when times are good, you tend to forget all the help you got along the way.
Yeah.
But one of the big values of a national association like ASA is information.
Right.
How do you describe the value of being able to stay on top of what has been something none of us have ever experienced in our lifetimes?
You're right, Tony. You know, I was able to help out a particular friend of mine that's in the financial services industry, and he kind of heard what was going on. But, you know, I was able to, hey, this is who you need to talk to. Here's a copy of the application. But it was through what I learned through our association with the ASA that, you know, I was able to help out a fellow friend.
Well, I think one of the hallmarks of ASA since the beginning is that high level of involvement, particularly at the national level.
You know, ASA is still the only national association of its kind with an office in Washington, D.C. And this is the type of situation where that really pays off and is really important.
Right.
By July, everyone was suffering from pandemic exhaustion. In the midst of the chaos, the ASA podcast posted its 50th episode milestone. To mark that occasion, we interviewed Bob Wills, ASA Chairman, and Ray Fisher, ASA President and Executive Director. Bob and Ray talked about how the association has changed to adapt to our new reality.
Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Tony. Appreciate being here.
Thank you, Tony, for this opportunity.
It's great to have you both on board. You know, this is a special show for us because it is our 50th podcast. So I'm honored to have both of you with me, and I thought it would be a great opportunity for us to kind of catch up on what's going on with ASA as we come out of the current pandemic.
Let me congratulate you, Tony, number one, and ASA for this 50th podcast. We're moving into the future and doing a very fine job at it.
Well, thanks for that, Bob. You know, this was an idea that came from a conversation that Ray and I had. It was actually Ray's idea. Last August, I went down to Florida to something called the Podcast Movement, and I was amazed at how much this medium was being used and growing quickly. Podcasting, they say, has become the new blogging. And it's just a neat communications channel. And I've been exposed to it. And I got to thank Carm Capriato. He kind of inspired us on this. His show, I've been on it a number of times. It just seemed like a great way to communicate with the industry and particularly with our members. We launched our first show in October. So we've been on the air for not quite a year yet, but it's a pleasure to get to 50. So I appreciate that. Thanks.
Definitely.
We've been doing a lot of changes to the organization. And Bob, let me start with you. Some of the changes we made, I believe, involved Auto Inc. and everything else that we're doing, basically communication-wise. Would you care to comment on that?
The way this came down, Auto Inc. used to be a printed copy, and we moved it along into digital. So that was our beginning. Then we enhanced that, obviously, with the podcast and then our webinar platform. And we enhanced our newsletters, social media platforms, and so much more that is moving us along. We had to make changes at ASA. We have to know how to communicate with people. And I've done that in my business. Obviously, we're doing it with ASA.
And some of the statistics are impressive, Bob. Just since January, we've had 8 webinars, 34 podcasts, 2 special COVID-19 industry forums, 68 emails. I don't know how many social media posts, including multiple live broadcasts from our Washington, D.C. representative. And Ray, I'm going to turn to you. You know, this crisis that we all went through kind of brought everything to a screeching halt. And our industry, as much as any other, really relied on a lot of live events, and all that stuff kind of came to a stop. So I think it was kind of fortuitous that we switched over to more social media and electronic communications channels when we did. But can we talk a little bit about your view on just how crucial all this has been to help us communicate during the crisis?
Well, you know, Tony, like you said, so many things have changed, and as Bob alluded to as well, the message was loud and clear as we went into 2019. That, of course, was when I first started, and the message was that we needed to change, and we needed to look at various mediums to get messaging out, communicate with our membership, and also communicate with the industry. Somebody was watching over us because, as you say, we moved into 2020, and I think we got January under our belts before everything else started hitting. And it really helped us prepare for opportunities to keep communication going at a time that was so crucial. None of us in our lifetime has ever experienced what we've been going through. And the ability to get that information out to our membership, out to the industry, with the stimulus packages that were made available, making sure that we were included in that as far as not only the stimulus, but also the importance of our business to help keep our emergency response teams moving and keep transportation going. I mean, those were paramount to what could have been very devastating to our industry. And I'm not saying that it didn't have an impact on our industry in a negative way, but through some of the forums we've done, like you said, the VIP forums, we saw how it impacted business. And in our last one that we did here less than a month ago demonstrated that some things are slowly coming back, but we have to be cautious. I think a key part of that was the communication piece, and bless Bob Redinghart for being there and doing everything he needed to do. And the team ourselves, you know, making sure that as that news hit, we got it out, whether it was social media, Auto Inc., the podcast opportunities. I mean, we exhausted all mediums that we could to deliver the message very timely. And like I said, somebody was watching over Tony that said, you know, move this concept along and get it going. And we did just that. Hats off to you. You and I set some timelines. We had some goals. We talked with the team. Quite honestly, I thought we stretched them a little bit farther than what we could have. And actually everybody delivered, including yourself. So I'm glad to say it's 50th, even though it seems like it's our 100th already. But yeah, it's great stuff. And you got to thank our industry for giving feedback, because it's when we get feedback and communication from our membership and the industry that new ideas come about. We just got to keep reinventing ourselves and say, what's the new way? Because you never want to be stagnant. Along those lines, I look back at the 50 podcasts, and I know Bob and the board recently wanted to know some of the information. And as we're going back through it, we've had some very good guests. We started off with very good guests, and there's a few that kind of exceeded our expectations. But what a way to deliver messages and get the information out in a quick way. And the good thing is, you know, all of us are driving to work, so we don't have to sit in front of a computer. We don't have to be having a headset on, staying at the office late. We can listen to it the way the platform is. We can listen to it on the way to work or on the way home from work just to get caught up on things, because we know how it is day to day in the industry.
You know, the ability to just pop in your earbuds and listen to 20, 30 minutes of good advice on your way to work or when you're having lunch or whenever, you know, being able to consume the information at your own time and at your own pace is one of the hallmarks, I think, of the communication channels we've been using. This has been particularly important, I think, to Bob Redding. And Bob has leveraged more than one of our channels.
Again, when you look at the Facebook Live, the podcasts, the Auto Inc. that we've done video on, I mean, all these channels that Bob Wills, our chairman, had alluded to here earlier in the conversation, you know, Cash for Clunkers came up through all of this pandemic as we're seeing stimulus bills get passed. And I mean, so not only were we watching what we needed to do on behalf of the industry and making sure that the monies were made available and we responded quickly and got the information to them, but while that was going on, this Cash for Clunkers topic came up too. So we had a bunch of things going on, and it allowed us to get our grassroots level going. In fact, on the Cash for Clunkers, the reason it wasn't in the House bill was we saw a huge response from the industry, and we need to do that. You know, when a call to action comes, we need to do it. And bless their heart, through this pandemic, they made time to do it. And I think it was 7 times the amount our highest grassroots level had been in the past. So, I mean, it was very powerful, and it kept it out of the House bill. And now, of course, it's being bantered around a little bit in the Senate. So as Bob does a call to action, we're going to continue using the various mediums, whether it's a video on Auto Inc., whether it's social media, whether it's podcast, but whatever we need to do to engage shop owners like Bob Wills and our board members and our industry and our members that we represent. Those call to actions are important, and they have to be done timely. So I can just imagine if, as Bob mentioned earlier, if we were still doing a printed magazine, just where we would be or not be for all this. So the opportunity to keep it fresh, keep it timely, and keep it current is just extremely important today.
When we look at these podcasts and the information we get out and the Taking the Hill, it's always brought up a question. People say, well, what does ASA do for us? It's right out there. It's right in the open. All you have to do is listen and read it, or read it and listen to it. Take the time, because we're there and we are there for our members. And there's extremely valuable information that comes out. I'm very proud of it.
This has been a quick snapshot of the first year of the ASA podcast. There's much more to talk about, of course, as we covered such topics as the evolution of OEM collision certification programs, met the first ever TexRock Award winner, learned about the world-class technician program, the new ASE Spanish language certification program, and profiled other organizations like the Collision Industry Foundation and Collision Industry Electronic Commerce Association, who work to improve our industry every day. From talking training with high school and college automotive instructors to delivering the latest information from our Mechanical and Collision Operations Committee and our Taking the Hill legislative updates, we hope you have come away better informed and encountered a few new ideas along the way. As always, we appreciate the support and feedback from our members as we look forward to what's now, what's new, and what's next, and embark on a year or two of the ASA podcast. From our ASA family to yours, we wish you all the best. Stay safe and stay well. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you're brand new to the ASA podcast, or if you've been here before, I encourage you to subscribe so you won't miss some of the great things we have coming up in our future episodes. Just hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening, and you'll be good to go. If you enjoy our podcast and find our content valuable, make sure to leave a rating and review wherever you are listening to this. And if you're an automotive service facility shop owner listening to this podcast and you'd like to know more about ASA, I invite you to visit our website at asashop.org. I'm Tony Mala, and thanks for listening.